MoneyWeb now on the money.
This show is brought to you by StanLib. Visit stanlib.com to get in touch with one of their investment specialists. StanLib Asset Management is an authorized financial services provider. Chatting with Philip Force, fund manager at PSG Asset Management. Philip, appreciate the time today. China, lots of fears around China, some of it undoubtedly justified. But certainly the one true story there is strong valuations. In a recent note you put out, you reminded us that the Hang Seng was down over 50% from 2021 to the beginning of this year. Bit of a recovery coming through. But if we compare it to other markets the world over, China remains very cheap on both the price earnings, but also a dividend yield.
Hi, Simon. Yeah, thanks for having me on your program. Yeah, you're right. You said, I think most people would be aware that there's been a lot of issues coming out of China in the last couple of years. We've seen, I guess, GDP growth holding up reasonably well at about 5%, but the property markets, regulatory interventions across many industries, especially technology sectors, but also increasingly tense geopolitical environments and many other issues have contributed to that sell-off that you alluded to. Now, the Hang Seng Index, having lost over half of its value since 2021, currently trades at a P ratio, price earnings ratio of just under 10 times. Yep. Now that compares to, I think, the S&P currently at 28 times earnings or global averages at about 22 times. So while all these issues that I mentioned are real, what we kind of find is that good opportunities for investment often kind of start in an environment of fear and uncertainty. And that kind of is what's leading us to discuss this today.
You mentioned property, because let's get that out of the way. I mean, property has been a big challenge for China over the last, I mean, I'm trying to remember when Evergrande and others first popped up. I think it was 2021. Are we seeing some signs of improvement coming through there?
Yeah, it's still early days. So as you say, property, it's an important sector of the economy, depending on different measures, about a quarter of GDP. So it's been a source of significant pain for quite a few years. What we're currently seeing, we're seeing some stabilization coming through in the sector with the government measures, but the government kind of needs to strike a fine balance of not supporting the sector too much and reigniting another bubble.
Yeah.
But obviously, it also needs to stabilize the sector and given its importance to the economy.
If we look at sort of geopolitics, politics, I suppose, we've seen a number of Western politicians anti-China. We've seen tariffs continuation under Biden. That certainly is it's a risk to China, but my sense is it's going to take a lot of time. The other part of the equation, of course, is that it's not as cut and dry as just throwing tariffs in. Of course, China comes back, and I'm thinking, you know, chips and the like, they then start producing internally, which actually strengthens the economy and strengthens the whole country.
Yeah, when we talk tariffs and geopolitics, it gets very complex. As you say, I mean, Western politicians have been anti-China for quite a while. But we think it's also got a lot of unintended consequences, which people could be underappreciating, given China's importance and scale in global supply chains, whether it's chips, et cetera. But we're talking of critical minerals that are needed for the kind of global and Western green transition or products required, like batteries, et cetera, where China just has so much supply. I think China produces four times more batteries than it's required for its domestic needs, which kind of leads China to export a lot of excess capacity to developed markets, kind of in a way offsetting some of the tariff pressures that might come their way or have already come their way.
Yeah, I get your point on that. Another point you raised in the notes, a lot of folks will say, I can get China exposure via a Tesla or a Nike or something like that. And you certainly can. But you make the point that actually local brands are getting much stronger and in many cases competing or out-competing the foreign brands that they've been having for, well, in some cases, in the case of, for example, Nike, for decades.
Absolutely. So a colleague and I just spent a week in China at the end of May, where we spoke to quite a few local experts and obviously management teams. And what's interesting, a lot of the kind of messages coming through is that the Chinese consumer that previously would just basically go for a Nike or for a Mercedes-Benz is becoming increasingly like indifferent between local and foreign brands. And that isn't just an economic equation that Chinese local brands are offering good value, but they're actually, over many decades of work and in many cases copying and out-competing Westerners, are offering really superior products. And we've seen that across, as you mentioned, Nike. As an example, we've got a recent holding in our global equity fund at PSG called Anta Sports, which is China's largest homegrown sportswear company. And actually that company increased its market share in the last kind of 10 years to 19% from under 8% back then. Nike is still a dominant company there, but it's just we're just seeing locals just increasing their share of wallet. And that's seen across quite a few industries.
Yeah, I mean, the big one, I think, which many of my listeners will know, which of course is BYD, which is the electric vehicles. We still tend to think Tesla when we think electric vehicles. And sure, I mean, they are the dominant player in the space. But we're seeing a lot of other companies come into it and a bunch of Chinese companies. And I'm thinking, well, the Chinese cars that, you know, drive around the roads of South Africa these days. 10 years ago, there was nothing.
Oh, absolutely. And I think we're going to see more of that going forward. So South African motorists will probably all know the Havals and Cherries in the local market and be aware of BYD. I think the Atto 3 model kind of getting launched late last year. Mm-hmm. And what's a bit ironic actually is that BYD actually replaced Volkswagen as one of the title sponsors at the European Championships held actually in Germany. And that's just a sign of things to come kind of going forward. A bit anecdotal, but it's backed up by a kind of evidence on market shares. When we were driving around Shanghai and Shenzhen, you can really see the scale of different Chinese car brands driving around, EVs and hybrids, etc. I think EVs, hybrids, there were almost half the markets of new car sales back in May. And it's just tremendous to be seeing different brands. I think you're going to be heading to Western and global shores. And that's backed up by export data. China was kind of nowhere from an export perspective 4 years ago. I think they were producing 700 odd thousand or exporting 700 odd thousand vehicles in 2020, and that's risen to over 4 million cars now. Actually, that displaced Japan and Germany as the largest exporter of cars, which is quite significant. And that's part as a result of obviously strategic initiatives of getting into car production, EVs, kind of 15 years ago. But importantly, given the slack in the Chinese economy, there's excess capacity that's being exported to global markets, which has implications for companies in those markets and jobs, etc. And that's once again leading to some of the tariff issues that we discussed earlier.
Yeah, and I take your point to the excess capacity, which you mentioned a moment ago as well. We'll leave it there. Philip Ward is a fund manager, PSG Asset Management. Appreciate the time.
The show is brought to you by Stanlib. Visit stanlib.com to get in touch with one of their investment specialists. Stanlib Asset Management is an authorized financial services provider.